All right, rolling sound on Thanksgiving week here in the podcast world and in the real world. I'm sitting here in the next to the space heaters in the garage working on the podcast today. Seems like everything I've ever worked on or started or been a part of has started in this room and has, you know, this is my idea place. This is my place with no windows and no TVs, my distraction-free zone. It's ADD-friendly, as they say, because they're just really, it's a focus room is what it is. So, but I'm here today with my buddy, and what are we going to call you now? Are we going to call you the producer, or what the heck is your title now?
Producer's fine.
Producer of the show. My producer, Mr. Ian Stewart is here with me on the show today. It's Thanksgiving week, so I didn't even bother asking around to try to find a guest this week. I thought that that'd be a little bit much for people because Nashville's a very transient place. People come from all over, so I had to find me a Nashville native to be on this show, and I did. So, two natives talking. It ain't even fair to call. I feel like that's disrespectful to Native Americans. Two Nashville people that have been here their whole lives. That's what we are, and we're here to give you a Thanksgiving episode and talk about things that's going on in the world and with the podcast and with, you know, just things in life, whatever we wrap off the top of our head. There's no plan. There's no script. There's no bullet points. There's no nothing, man. We just shoot from the hip and speak from the heart. That's what we do.
That's what we do most of the time anyway.
Yeah. Usually there's chicken involved. And a pitcher of beer, but not right now. So, a little backstory, if you haven't met Ian before, Ian Stewart and me, we go back to the first grade here in Nashville. So, probably my oldest friend, the only one from that era that I've ever kept up with, or that kept up with me, shall we say. We grew up in a neighborhood together, went to all the same schools, was in the same jazz bands and marching bands together, and then we ended up playing rock and roll music together. Ian was in the first band that I was ever in, and like vice versa, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yep.
Something along those lines. We were the only two people at Glencliff High School that wanted to play rock and roll music. Well, there was only about four or five of us total.
Yeah, but not just rock and roll music, old rock and roll music.
Yeah, we were definitely outcasted ourselves pretty early. we could have lived in the 70s and been happy there.
Right. Everybody else was playing Bowling for Soup. We were playing Zeppelin.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we'll see how that turned out. So, who's Zeppelin's still popular, okay? Right. No disrespect, guys, if you're listening to the show, Soup Boys.
I do love Bowling for Soup.
Good. Well, I love bowling, and I love soup. So, what song did they have?
Girl, All the Bad Guys Want.
Give me some more. I don't know that one. Speaking of microphone producer.
Now I can't remember the words.
1985? Was that them?
What?
Did they have a song 1985?
They might have. They might have been off the second record.
Oh.
They died pretty quick. Yeah. They had like three records. Only one really got radio play.
I hope they made some money. This music business is crazy. If you need to correct me later, wait a minute. We'll put it in the Google machine. Let's do this. We're going to name off some Bowling for Soup hits.
While you're looking that up, I saw another band from that era the other night here in Nashville. Good Charlotte.
Oh my, where did you see them at?
Saw them at Marathon Music Works.
Really?
Yep.
You know what, I saw the sign for that,
and I gotta say, they were everything I hoped they would be.
Were they good?
They were amazing.
Okay. Well, they're one of those bands that, like, you know, whether you like their music or not, they just rock. 1985, they did do 1985. Okay. Bowling for Soup, 1985. Girl, all the bad guys want. High School Never Ends. Okay, we see where this is going. Punk Rock 101. Oh, The Bitch Song. Ohio.
I don't know any of these.
Ohio. Almost. No Hablo Ingles. When We Die. So if you haven't heard the discography of Bowling for Soup, that's the great, you know, beginning of it there on Google. Off the record, a hangover you don't deserve. So yeah, so that's that. Hope those guys are doing well and all those things. We're not here to roast anybody. We're just having fun. So, but, yeah, getting back to what Ian's doing here. Ian's helping me with the technology side of things, which has been a theme for our whole lives. I'm more of a hardware guy than a software guy.
Right.
Myself, I'm pretty good with a wrench, but not very good with a computer. So, Ian's here making the old podcast sound like it's supposed to sound. And I was really excited last week when, if you listen to Darius's interview in the middle of it, there was a pretty snazzy little cut to one of their songs. And I was in my car, and I don't normally listen to the podcast back, but I did want to see, you know, how that cut was and how the audio sounded and everything. And I got pretty excited when I heard how smooth that was. It made me sound like a real podcaster, like I really know what I'm doing here, folks. And that's, you know, that's part of what Ian's doing. Also, too, we thought it'd be fun where, you know, if ever there's a funny story that we have, we can jump in there and he can be another character on the show. And we have a million of them, I'm
sure.
That's
very true.
And we've been through a lot. Hell, you know, when you go through puberty together, well, you got a lot of stories. You know, it's true. So what else is there? What else was I going to say? Oh, he's gonna be like the guy on what was your example?
Frasier.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he'll be playing that role, okay?
I'll be the man in the booth.
Yeah, the man in the booth, making sure things pop off and go right. And you know, also hold me accountable to actually do the show, cuz sometimes I can get a little self-conscious if I don't feel like I have anything good to say. I won't, you know, if I don't have a guest, I pretty much won't do the show. So I'm sorry about that if I've ever skipped an episode on you and disappointed you. But, you know, sometimes this garage can be kind of cold by itself, by yourself. And you can make up 100 excuses to not do the show. So anyway, we're going on that. We got big things coming up. We're trying to build this this podcast into an actual thing, into an actual you know, part of more people's lives. And we'll talk more about Patreon when I figure all that out. I'm going to have a meeting maybe with Josh Taylor and see if he can tell me about it. They're kind of like, it's so funny because both those guys, Josh and Jordan, have been on our show I get an email from Patreon. You know, once you sign up, you get an email like once a day. And it's like, refer to Blimey Cow, you know, as an example of how to do it. And I'm like, well, what the heck? I've already interviewed those guys, and those are some of my good buddies. And now here they are popping up on my email as the way to do things, which I should have known. But they've kind of been on Patreon since day one and on the ground level with that. And no wonder they're so referred on there. They do a good job, and they make it work. So anyway, it's Thanksgiving week here. I don't know when this episode's coming out, but it'll come out one of the next coming days here. It's Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday today.
Tuesday.
So maybe it'll come out Thanksgiving Day. Who knows? But we'll figure this out. But this is our Thanksgiving special, and we figured we'd just chop it up and kick it around and see what kind of funny Thanksgiving stories we can come up with. And I don't know, man. Have you been to Mississippi for Thanksgiving lately?
I did go last year.
What part of Mississippi is it?
Couldn't tell you. Somewhere near Columbia, Mississippi, which is it's really close to Southern Miss University. It's where my aunt and uncle live, and for the past 10 or so years, my mom's side of the family has all gathered down that way.
Okay, because I remember when we were in school and stuff, and you'd have to go on that 8-hour journey to Mississippi. Mm-hmm.
And I almost never made it back. It seemed like every year, van broke down.
No.
On the way back. Something bad happened.
Y'all had
happened.
A van?
Yeah, we had an old, I think it was a Plymouth Voyager.
Really?
Yeah, this old blue van.
Like a touring van.
Yeah, but much smaller.
I got you. You
much
know
more uncomfortable.
While I'm thinking about it, I saw a really great Craigslist ad earlier for a touring van I'm going to read off later in the show. Hey, that can be maybe our thing, our Craigslist ad of the day. Who knows?
Ah.
What was it, though? Let me see. Touring van. Continue on with your story, and we'll do this later. So you go to Mississippi, and it's like 8 hours from Nashville.
Yep.
And it's kind of
generally
like,
crammed in the back seat between two brothers.
Oh, my gosh. Sounds like a pretty bad trip, man.
It was rough at times, but we always had a TV and a VHR player back there. watching some sort of Disney movie, I'm sure.
VCR, bro.
VCR.
VCR, bro.
I knew it was VHS. I couldn't figure it out.
Dude, I know. It's hard out here to remember how we used to do things. Found it. Okay, we'll read it off later. Yeah,
back in high school, I had several instances of near breakdown. I remember one week we were trying to come back for the spring play. Almost had to take a bus home.
You almost had to hop to a Greyhound bus. Yep. I remember that. I remember that. You were broke down. It was like, I ain't going to make it. Oh, man. We had, Ian did all the plays, and we were all in class with the play directors. And it's like, oh, boy, you're talking about tension when the lead guy is not in the building. You got some tension. Elvis is not in the building. Okay? Not here, people. We got problems. So you'd go down to Mississippi and... What would y'all do down there?
Nothing.
Nothing?
There's nothing to do down there.
Nothing.
There's barely any Wi-Fi.
Oh, man. That's the early days of Wi-Fi, too.
Yeah, but you know, all us young cousins, we go outside, throw rocks, something.
Throw rocks. Shoot a bird with a BB gun.
It was straight Andy Griffith's show down there.
Andy Griffith. Barney? Barney? I love Andy Griffith. Old Barney told somebody that it was ugly as homemade soap. That's what I say about different little babies that aren't cute. They're ugly as homemade soap. You can take that, use that next time you see an ugly baby.
It's good.
Yeah, because homemade soap, it is not symmetrical. It just isn't. I'm telling you. Have you ever made some lye soap?
No, I have not.
Yeah, buddy. Whew, gracious Lord. Well, I'm trying to think. Do I have any Thanksgiving stories? I have one. We played in the Turkey Bowl one year with people at Community Bible Church. Mm-hmm. And Callie was talking about it. So I said, sure, we'll play in the Turkey Bowl. I play football every Saturday anyway. So it was like, yeah, I'll go. And dadgum, it was kind of cold out, you know.
It's always freezing.
Yeah, it was kind of cold. And I don't know, it was early on in my return to football, and I don't know what happened, but somehow I got jammed up. I jammed up a finger and didn't know it, and I jammed it pretty bad. I just didn't know it, you know, until I took the glove off after we were done. And when I took the glove off, I was like, eee, that hurts, you know? Mm. And I kept looking at it, and it was kind of swollen and red and blue and stuff, and I want to say it was that one, this left hand first finger here. And whatever, didn't think nothing of it, you know. But as the day went on, it was like hurting more and more and more and more. And I was like, dang it, you know. And I got like 10 gigs that next week probably at the time playing mandolin and stuff. And so that night, it was just throbbing. I mean, it was sucking. And I was like looking online for like how to relieve a jammed finger, you know, and it's just that first knuckle, really, you know, and it's still kind of lopsided and funny looking now. My fingernail is too. But anyway, I got it pretty good, and I think I got it trying to get a guy's flag. That's usually when you tear your fingers up.
Right.
And anyway, I had to call my buddy Rick because he was living down the street, and I was like looking all. I said, Rick, I read online that if you poke a hole through your fingernail with a needle, it'll relieve the tension on your jammed finger. He was like, okay, what do you want me to do with that? You know? And I was like, well, I tried to do it to myself, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't apply enough pressure. I was too chicken to do it. I said, so I need you to do it.
What were you trying to do this with? A three-hole punch?
No, I was trying to do it with a needle and a lighter. And so, and so I was lighting the safety pin or something, whatever it was. I was lighting it up and trying to, you know, relieve his pain in my finger. Bruno had this happen last year and did the same. Had to do the same thing.
Wow.
But anyway, it hurts like a brother, I'm telling you. So I go over to Rick, and I just put my hand on the kitchen counter and turn the other way, and he's lighting the needle up, and I'm like, just stick it, Rick, and pop it through that first finger there. And I was like, yeah, it didn't hurt at all once you don't look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt some pressure, but that's it. I said, immediately it felt better.
Really?
And I looking at it, I was like, I was kind of in disbelief. I said, Rick, you better do it again just for good measure.
What was Rick's face during all this?
He was like, whatever you need, bro. You know, he's okay. A good friend. And so I stuck my hand over there again and looked the other way again. He popped it again. I was like, okay, well, it feels a lot better now. And it works. It's like an old wives' tale, but it actually does work. Poke a hole through your fingernail. And I don't know. It just allowed a little pressure. But after that, never had a problem with it again. Just kept rolling. But it still was sore for a week or two. But
well, sure, you just poked a couple of holes with a needle through it.
Yeah, it wasn't nearly as bad as it was. Bruno dropped a microphone stand on his pinky or something.
Yes.
The other day. And or last sometime this year, and it just whoosh, pow, you know, or it, well, maybe it was one of those things that holds up a speaker, but it was something like that. And dude, it came down, and he said, bro, he said, that's the most painful thing I've ever had in my life. And he said, I couldn't believe it because it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And eventually, he had to do that trick, I think, you know, mm-hmm. And him and Katie did. So he popped his finger back right, and but yeah, that's some of the old turkey bowl story. Wasn't even that, I don't know. We didn't. Oh, the other story from the turkey bowl is this guy was like out there. He was like this Marine, and somebody kind of lowered a shoulder on the Marine or whatever, and he got up. He was pretty hot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this guy, I don't know, he was just overly competitive with football. And like, I've played a lot of flag football in my life and, you know, played in leagues here in town, and I've seen what, you know, like, you know, people, what it brings out in them sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're a little competitive and all, and it's all good. But this guy was like, for a church function, he was a little bit over the top. And he was arguing, hollering about the rules and stuff. And I'm kind of laughing under my breath a little bit watching him go. And finally, he gets mad about the guy. He lowers his shoulder on the Marine guy, and the Marine guy's like ready to fight him, you mm-hmm. know? And so the guy goes walking off, and, the Marine guy like chucks the football from like 30 yards away. Just, I don't know if it missed him or it hit him at this point. I done forgot, but it whizzed like right by him.
I'll bet it hit him. That dude's Green Beret now.
Yeah, it's freaking, he is.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yep.
Okay.
And I know the other guy you're talking about too.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay, good. See, I don't know. I didn't know him. But man, I think he hit him with it from all that way. It's like on Remember the Titans, and the guy just chucks the football and goes, who's the fruitcake now? It's kind of like that.
I'll bet he did. This guy you're talking about, we did a midsummer island trip where we go out, make a campfire, cook some food, play a few games, that kind of thing. We played this some sort of variation on hide and seek. This dude scaled a 30-foot tree with no branches.
No branches.
It just went straight up it. It was ridiculous.
And he's just looking down at everybody.
Yep.
How hilarious would that be? But what was the other guy's deal, man? Why was he so, I don't get it.
He has been very invested in that.
No, it wasn't the leader of the whole thing.
It wasn't?
No, it was somebody else. It was somebody that I didn't know.
Kid?
No, older guy, bald headed guy.
Hmm.
But this is 5 years ago we're talking about it, but it wasn't, no, it was older guy. It wasn't anybody that you and I both know. So it was so I was like, dang, he chucked the football. I want to say it was the Marine Corps guy was his brother.
Oh, wow.
Was you know, the guy you're thinking of, his brother, right? I thought so. I could be having this all screwed up. But anyway, forget it. Forget it. The guy threw a football at him from 30 yards away, and it was hilarious.
That's pretty awesome.
So, but also embarrassing for a church function. So,
it's very true.
I was like, man, my guys on Saturday morning don't fight this much. You know, like, we don't fight at all, hardly. But so that was that Thanksgiving story. So I had to go to the Thanksgiving dinner right after that and no-sell my finger because my dad would have been like, I told you so. Told you not to be doing that. He's always scared of my hurt my fingers and stuff playing football all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to like no sell it while I was there when it was hurting. I had some ice, and when he showed up, I threw the ice away. That's what was going on there. So, well, what are you doing for Thanksgiving this year?
This year I am doing Thanksgiving with my dad.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The next day I'm doing Thanksgiving with my neighbors. I've always kind of traded off between going down to Mississippi, having it with my neighbors and stuff. And this year I'm doing kind of a little bit of everything.
I got you. Well, but, not going. So you are going to Mississippi?
No, I'm not going this year.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't either. Oh, that's too, man. It's one thing to go 8 hours. It's another thing to go 8 hours and end up in Mississippi. No disrespect.
Right.
So, I mean, dude, come on. I ain't left nothing there. God bless it. Anyway.
Have you ever done Thanksgiving out of the country, like in Germany?
No. Nope. I've never been out of the country on Thanksgiving. I've actually never been away from home on Thanksgiving. Somehow we've always been home on Thanksgiving. I think it's just because, like, who's going to come to the show on freaking Thanksgiving? So we always just made it home. I know we broke our necks a couple times to get home by Thanksgiving.
Hmm.
But,
like playing the day before?
Like in Michigan, the day before and coming home. Like that, you know? And I remember one time we were gone an entire month and we came home. Maybe it was 5 weeks even, and came home on Thanksgiving. That was...
Wow.
That was something else right there, because I barely even remember that. It was so much, you know? But, yeah, I don't know if that wasn't the same year as the football thing. I think it might have been the next year. But it's nuts, man.
Man.
Some of those crazy stories of doing them. I don't know if I would... Oh, well, I guess I would. I just did it last month. But, I don't know if I'd sign up for a month of on the road straight anymore, but what I've learned is if the money's right, typically you'll say yes.
That's true.
You know, and that's just part of it. Feast or famine out here. Well, what else we want to do? You want me? Let's read this Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
So I saw this today because I really want a truck, but I really don't have the money for trucks. So right now I'm close, but I get online and look up trucks all the time on Craigslist in the middle of doing my Uber stuff. Okay, so you can find this. I'm promoing this guy's van to help him sell it more. I almost halfway wondered if it was Colony House's van. So, because they had a van named Maroon as well. So, comfy tour van, Chevy Express 1500 LT. 2002, condition good, 6 cylinders, rear wheel drive, gas, 179,000 miles. Custom paint, full size, clean title, automatic. Hey, pretty good van. And the guy wants $4,000 for it. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a description, which popped me pretty good. Meet Rooney. Yes, there Rooney 2. Yes, there was a Rooney 1. She's a 2002 Chevy 1500 LT van. Seats 7 in captain's chair comfort, a.k.a. leg room for days. I purchased her in 2001 to replace my beloved Rooney 1. Exactly the same, except no bitchin' two-tone. I'm only selling her because my band has graduated to a silver Mercedes Sprinter named Sterling. I know, I'm not very creative at van naming. I've used Rooney 2 for touring for the past 5 years. She's been well cared for and maintained. I have the records to prove it, and would be the perfect first tour van, family road trip mobile, or just plain sexy whip with 179,000 miles. You're getting up... You've with 179,000 miles, you're getting up there, but easily have another 80 to 100 on her if maintained. It's a freaking Chevy truck, for goodness sakes. Disclaimer, Rooney 2 does have a service engine light soon light on, but the technicians at McDuffie Goodyear, which is right down the street here in my old neighborhood here, me and Ian's neighborhood, said it would cost around $700, so I'm factoring that into the price I'm asking. Not only is Rooney 2 a specimen of highway comfort, she is also an anomaly of technological irony, possessing both a VHS player and a two-fold LCD screen, both factory installed. I'll throw in my amazing collection of VHS tapes for your viewing pleasure, which includes Anchorman, Billy Madison, Top Gun, and Hoosiers. The price is low for the VHS collection alone. I'm also selling my super necessary Hallmark 5x8 trailer. I had an upgrade there, too. $4,000 for the van, $1,000 for the trailer, or make a deal for both. Holler at me and take her for a spin. And then kayfabe name of Matt. I'm not believing that name. Okay.
You know, that's some pretty creative writing for a very uncreative name of the vehicle.
Yeah, I'm checking some people's phone numbers I know right now to see if it's them. You know, because I got a suspicion that might be... No, I don't know whose phone number's on it, but I was thinking it might be a Caleb Chapman job, but he would do something like that. And they do have a van named Rune, so but could I don't be. Know if that's them. I can't rightly tell. It says Belmont Hillsboro, though. So anyway, I hope you sell your van, bro. And if I had the money, I wouldn't mind having it.
I mean, I think the VHS players
worth $4,000.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly the money. That's like market value for something like that too, because like. That's exactly what I paid for our van, except we paid $4,000 for the van. Only had 79,000 miles on it, though.
And it did not have a VHS player.
No, it did.
It did?
Yeah, it did. We had that, and we replaced it with the
We put DVD the DVD player in, hooked up the TV and all that.
Yeah, and what else happened with that? Then 64. We had some of the similarities of that, you know? And that first van was awesome, man. I really enjoyed it.
Didn't we have
it.
A game system back there at one point? We were playing...
That was 64.
It was the N64?
Yeah. And then, you know, it had a lot of character. I really enjoyed that van.
Mm-hmm.
We drove the fire out of it. Had some problems with it, whatever. Did the best we could. And
right.
We put an extra 100, probably extra 150 or 60 on it. It had like 240 on it when we got rid of it, I guess.
Wow.
Something, you know, finally got rid of it. But, you know. Old van stories. It never did quite cool off, though. It was always in the summer. It's pretty warm.
Yep.
You know. But that was fun stuff. You got any favorite road stories from that era? Ian used to travel with us on the early days doing sound and everything.
Yep.
So what's your favorite road story from that era?
Well, I can't think of much right now. I remember waking up one morning, looking out to the left, asking Bruno, is that the ocean?
Oh,
we were in the middle of Texas.
Oh no! Why'd you do that for?
Just in a daze from late night's work, and
oh man,
woke up and you couldn't see the other side of the lake. It just looked like water. And
I
was borderline panicked, thinking like
Fort Worth. I remember that.
Did we miss it?
That's like on your way to Fort Worth.
Yeah,
I know that big spot right there. Oh, I'll tell you a funny road story from the Sadie tour. We rode through this one part of Texas,
yeah,
and everything just smelled terrible, and I thought it was our latrine backing up in the RV. And so me and Johnny, we pulled over, we said, "Daggum, we gotta find a dump. we're smelling poo poo back here, you know." They're trying to sleep and it's right next to the latrine, and I'm going, "Oh Lord, I can't believe that," you know. And I was dreading having to go dump it because it was going to be my job, which I figured out how to do. It's not hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
On a new RV, I wouldn't want to do it on an old RV, but
no.
This is on a brand new one, only 20,000 miles on it. So everything was spick and span. So call that thing the stinky slinky that you drain the latrine with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, the stinky slinky. I learned that off of YouTube. But I started talking to one of the other drivers, and I said, "Man, I think my latrine is backing up. I smelled shit all night." And so he goes, "No, that's just a part of Texas we're in. We went through all them cow farms through there, you know." Something else was causing it to stink too. Oil refinery. That's what it was. The oil refineries and the cow farms, which, man, there was a lot of cows in really close proximity. It wasn't cute. It was actually quite sad. But yeah, that was that.
I'll bet you passed by some In-N-Out Burger farms.
Yeah, I stopped at an In-N-Out Burger. No, I stopped at a Whataburger at like 3 in the morning one night because I was hungry and it was 24 hours. There's always that game you play when you're driving overnighters of like, man, am I going to find something decent that's open right now?
Right.
And one night, man, I tried 3 different places, and they were all supposed to be 24 hours, and they were closed. 2 McDonald's and a Steak and Shake, all closed.
Wow.
And I said, "Daggum, it ain't meant to be." You know, I turned a 2-hour trip into a 3.5-hour trip trying to find something to eat, you know, and then it was like, good night, bro. So, but a lot of those drivers wouldn't eat anything because they get tired.
Right.
They eat, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Full belly. Late night, I'd definitely be asleep.
Yeah, it was hard, man. Once you'd eat, you know, you're ready to go to sleep, man. That was brutal. I finally smartened up and quit eating until I got to the venue. But a lot of times when you get to the venue, the food there wasn't any good. Mm. Sometimes it was good, but you can make a meal out of anything, I know, but, you know, it wasn't, that was part of the deal. So for what they were paying me, I should shut up and smile and say thank you very much, which I did. So, well, is there anything else we want to go over?
Yeah, want to hear a little bit about just your backstory music, some like early day funny stories.
Oh yeah, well again, everything I've ever started in this room we're in, and my first memory of music and playing drums was with the guy I played with the other night in the Allman Brothers tribute thing, which went over real good. That was some of the most fun I've ever had playing drums, was playing Friday night at the Soul Shine Pizza with Gary and all those guys. It was hilarious. I'd love to do it again sometime. It's hilarious because you get to be in this really awesome band, and like, you can jump in it and just kind of find a place, find your spot and play in there, but really there's no responsibility on you hardly at all. Right. Because you're not holding down the fort or anything. Like, drums are usually holding down the fort big time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he had a kit set up over there about kind of where the organ, where the Leslie is, and it was a green Gretsch kit, and I still remember it. And do you remember that first the kit that was in here when we first started playing? It was that one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't in here the whole time. He switched them in and out over the years. But I remember that old green one. The green Spockle Gretsch drum set, which was a great kit.
Didn't you end up buying that off of him at one point?
No. He wouldn't sell that one. I wish he would. That would have been a great one to have. But I've bought...
I know you played it some.
Yeah, I used it a couple times. But it was... and then, what did I buy? I bought a black Gretsch kit off him that I used for a long time.
Right.
With a 24-inch bass drum that... And I just sold that one back to him last year. And what did I get off of that? I think I traded the black Gretsch kit for the Rosewood kit that I had for a year.
Gotcha.
And then I traded the Rosewood kit for this natural maple kit that I have here now, because the bass drum, I like a 14 by whatever bass drum. I don't like long bass drums, and that one was a 16. So, and now I have another Gretsch kit off I got off of him that I traded the Ludwig kit for. The red Gretsch kit, I traded the Ludwig straight up for that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, me and Gary, we make deals on Gretsch drums and all the time. And if ever I go to sell them, I just sell them right back to him.
Right.
So it's a good deal. We keep it in a family that way. So Gary Forgham is pretty much, and my dad are pretty much the guys that taught me how to play. Gary didn't mean to. I just kind of watched him play.
Right.
And then my dad set me down one day and was like, he showed me how to go boom, chop, boom, chop with like a eighth note pattern.
Yep.
One and two and like that. And he said, if you can play that, you can play anything. And I was like, okay. And so I'm like 7 or 8 years old. And now right today, that's pretty much true. That's most songs.
Yeah.
So
little flourish here and there, but that's pretty much it.
It all pretty much starts and goes there, especially in a studio setting. Like if you're creating the track, like a studio trick that I've learned, I picked this up from, listening to the other studio drummers talk, but it's like, start with the least amount of playing that you can, you know, like, don't just start off with a 16 note pattern and, you know, on the hi-hat and really flashy bass drum lines or whatever. Like, do as little as possible, because it's a lot easier to digest somebody telling you to play more than it is to play less.
Sure.
It's much more the vibe for them to say, hey, I want a little more right there, than it is to say, hey, can you back off right there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sucks. So you want to come from the angle of, you know, adding to rather than taking away. So that just goes back to what my dad said, and I just play what he, like, that little bit of groove right there. But so, yeah, and then whenever, you know, fast forward to when you and I started playing together in high school, I was just obsessed with, you know, classic rock and Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Right. Brothers and Led Zeppelin, and we kind of went through all that together. We would watch all those, you know, DVD concerts together. And
I got one for you.
Yeah.
I don't know why I remember this so vividly, but... We watched an Allman Brothers, it had to have been released somewhere in the 2000s, because we watched a DVD of it on a karaoke machine at birthday party.
We did that, didn't we?
Yep. You had just gotten that DVD. It was at Blake's birthday party.
God bless.
16th birthday party. And it was before everybody got there. We were looking for something to do. And
wow. See, I don't even remember that. We watched
it on a karaoke machine.
I don't even remember that, bro. See, that's good memories you got there. Yeah, so we you know, that was when concert DVDs was the thing. I mean,
right.
My life was literally changed by concert DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it wasn't for, you know, because, I don't know, I feel like I was a pretty aimless teenager. You know, like, I love sports, but then I didn't love them enough to go work out in the summer to do them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I love playing, but I didn't love it, you know, on that level.
No need to do it professionally or anything.
Never had a chance on that anyway. But, like, you know, to go up there and, like, cough up days on your summer to go work out and freaking get hit, you know, mm-hmm. and do 2 days and sprints, you know, which I did that in junior high school and stuff, which is fun. But that's, like, you know, that's a lot easier. Then high school gets pretty serious. And, you know, was playing the drums and steel, but not really having nowhere to go. And But you know, by the time the tail end of our freshman year of school, it was like, you know, I remember my dad, he bought that. Somebody bought it for him. I think Carolyn bought it for him, but at Walmart or Sam's Club or something, and bought that Allman Brothers thing that we still have that you're talking about from the Beacon Theater. And,
right.
God dang, that was the first time I ever saw Derek Trucks play.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever saw just the Allman Brothers band ever. You know, I'd heard them on records and stuff. But I was like, holy cow, I don't know who this guy Derek Trucks is, but he's amazing.
I think that was the moment when both me and you became like real Allman Brothers friends.
Yeah, and just, I was like, I saw that and I said, whoa, like I wanna learn how to do that. And at that point, I couldn't play a lot of those 6-8, you know, times. And
mm-hmm.
all that was like jazz to me. So I had to sit down and learn it the hard way, like taking a CD and freaking rewinding it and, you know, tearing CDs up to learn how to play those songs. So that was that. And then the next DVD that changed my life was when I went to Walmart one day and bought, I was 16 and bought the Led Zeppelin DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the first, you know, whatever, hour and a half of it. And I remember I sat there and I was watching it by myself. My brother didn't watch it with me or nothing. And I was just at my mom's house, just sitting there watching this thing. I'm going, holy cow, this is Robert Plant when he's 21 years old.
Right.
John Bonham when he's 21 years old playing, because they were all like old guys by the time, you know, like now dead, you know, and you're just like, what the heck, you know, but to see them in their prime, like I've always been into anybody, whether it be sports or music or whatever, like in their prime. And mm-hmm. you're just watching this, like, here's Led Zeppelin, not even with a drum riser, just drums sitting on the stage.
Right.
No fireworks, no pyro, no nothing.
Just a theater.
Yeah, it was Royal Albert Hall, which is great. I'd love to go there one day, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a stage. And no video screen, no Madison Square Garden, none of that. Nope. Just guys up there just playing the blues and just shredding it.
Right.
And so I looked at that and I said, holy cow, like, I gotta grow my hair long and do this. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
that was the moment right there. And so... if it wasn't for concert DVDs, then my dad got the Songlines DVD, which is Derek Trucks' thing, and we watched that one a lot. God, man. Now it's all YouTube. Thank goodness. It's a lot cheaper. but I remember I paid like $45 for that Led Zeppelin DVD.
It was expensive back then because it was the double disc.
Oh, yeah. It was like 6.5 hours of footage, and really all I cared about was that first hour from Royal Albert Hall. Mm-hmm. I still would watch that right now today, and you still can learn from it. If you haven't ever seen that stuff, that'll be on our video of the week, our recommended video of the week. Go watch the first hour of the Led Zeppelin DVD from Royal Albert Hall in 1970. If you've never seen that and you call yourself a music lover, and then you're freaking crazy if you don't watch this, you know?
Right.
Like, to me, like, every band that I ever was in was going to be influenced by that particular performance or that era, you know? And like, people ask me all the time about like the Vespers, like, well, where did the sound come from? Well, everything I've just told you, you know, from the boys' side of things, you know, mm-hmm. like me and Bruno were looking to swing a band like the Led Zeppelin rhythm section. And we gave it our best shot, you know? Like, you know, we hit hard, and we have a swing to the way that we play. You know, it's not just like straight ahead, straight eighth notes, you know. And looking back now, it's like, bro, I have the hardest time sometimes playing songs that are so straight. Whereas like somebody, like they're so straight that if you did swing something, people would be like, oh, that's out of place.
Right.
Like worship songs a lot of times are that way, you know, and you have to be so straight the whole time. And it's just like, that's just the trend. That's just how the songs are recorded right now or whatever. Not all of them, but a lot of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
well, because everything now is recorded to a click track, whereas back then...
yeah, it was manipulated.
Yeah.
You had room to move or whatever.
You just played. I mean, listen to Heart's Magic Man.
Yeah.
Listen, the tempo at the end of the song is like 5 to 10 beats per minute faster than the beginning. It's ridiculous.
Well, and that's a good thing. That's human beings playing music. You know, I like listening to old records and trying to put them on a click and seeing how close those old drummers came. Like Mick Fleetwood could get pretty darn close.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it's not perfectly any time. That's what's crazy about a click is like, to me, when I hear like, what's that song that that I like, that Fleetwood Mac song I like so much, like Goldust Woman, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like such a vibey, you know, in the pocket thing, but it's not any one particular 120 beats per minute. It just isn't. Nope. You know, the human element of it is it ebbs and flows just that much, just a little bit to go up and down and ride like that. And that's what I love about that stuff. So last night when I got to do the Allman Brothers gig, dude, I'm swinging every possible thing you can swing,
mm-hmm.
because the job description in that band is to swing the band. You know what I mean? It's to, like, you're playing the jazz drummer spot, and in jazz, everything is swung, right? So Gary's playing more straight over here, but even he is swinging his ass off because, like, the nature of that groove is on a dotted eighth versus a straight eighth.
Right.
That's a shuffle. That's what a shuffle is. Like, if you're wondering, like, music talk, what I'm talking about, any shuffle that you've ever heard, you know, that's a blues shuffle or whatever, that's the dotted eighth notes thing, you know? So, man, we would be doing those shuffles, and that's cool, but man, like when you play songs like In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, like, those mm-hmm. suckers are swinging, especially from the J-Mo perspective.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's constantly finding something to swing. And that's kind of, so I was like, it dawned on me when I was doing that, I was like, this music is so easy for me because this is the way my brain hears it. This is the way I approach the drum set, you know? And so whenever people would ask us about the Vespers, I'm like, well, what's part of the Vesper? Well, part of it is the rhythm section is doing their best to swing the
right.
best that we can, you know? And then you have the meeting of the minds with the, which I, you know, I always love, like Iron and Wine and those type of folk singers, mm-hmm. you know, Bob Dylan or whatever, like all that stuff. That was kind of where Cal and Phoebe were coming from. And they taught us about, you know, a song, writing a song and singing a song and songs having lyrics and all this and that. And whereas we were just, all we cared about is, did it feel good? Did the music feel good? You know, we had no idea what the song, we didn't care about the lyrics or nothing like that before we met them. We were just hope, all we was ready to try to get to was a solo. Once we got right. to the guitar solo, that was where we put in our work. You know what I mean? In every band before this, you know, that was us being green, was we just was ready to get to the guitar solo. And then when it got to the guitar solo, we were going to put in some work. Because mm-hmm. all the bands that we just mentioned, that's what they did. Except they had vocal and song and everything. We didn't. But when we met Cal and Phoebe, they're like, no, you got to have a song first. And then you can... then you can do all the stuff you want to do, you know? And we sort of taught them how to rock and roll, you know? Because if you look at the progression of it, like the early days, they're very stiff and standing there and looking at their feet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But today, you know, I mean, I give Callie Cryer all the credit in the world for being a front woman, you know? She's an entertainer, you know? She knows how to do that spot. Which is not an easy thing to learn how to do. And I think it's something that's kind of just got to be within you somewhere. And it has to be discovered more so than somebody can actually teach you how to do it.
Right.
Somebody just has to make you comfortable enough with what you do just to for you to have the confidence to just go do it, you know. And she eventually got there. And, you know, that's kind of where that whole thing come from. But, you know, I like for stuff to have a swing to it. You know, American music, the two things that American music ever contributed to anything was jazz and rock and roll. Okay. Like Elvis Presley, guitar guy. Oh, shucks. What's his name right now? But Little Richard, obviously. Come on now. I'm trying to think of it. It'll come to me.
Like B.B. King?
No.
Later?
No, earlier, like 50s rock guitar, black guy. Super obvious. I'm an idiot for missing it right now. But anyway.
Like Johnny B. Goode era?
Yeah. Like that's his song.
Okay. I'm never going to get this either.
Yeah. Just Google it. Shucks. I'm going to kick myself for not knowing this. But the whole point of it is all that stuff swung. Okay? Jazz swung. Rock and roll. Early rock and roll swung. So that's kind of where I hang my hat on that. I think it's important to swing. So, Greg Allman calls them the four kings of rock and roll. He says, Greg Allman, Little Richard, Elvis Presley, Little Richard,
Chuck Berry,
and one more. Who am I missing on that? I'm missing somebody. But anyway, they're all from the South too, by the way. So, that's just a little fun fact. But you get that one for free. But so Southern rock and roll is kind of a oxymoron because rock and roll started in the South.
Right.
Right. So, but anyway, everybody else added them to and took it to the next level. Like, I thought the British guys really were the ones that took rock and roll to the next level. The
right.
Beatles, the Stones, the, you know, because they were fans.
Yeah.
Of American rock and roll.
When you look at Beatles' early stuff and what they were playing in the bars before they even recorded their first album, they're playing songs like Elvis songs.
Yeah. And Elvis got it from the old black guys that he would go hear. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Little Richard, if it wasn't so dang racist back in that day, would have been Elvis.
Right.
You know what I mean? He had that sound, you know, and he'll tell you right today, you know. But, you know, that's a fair point. So, anyway, I love it. I love that side of things, and all music is good, but if somebody asked me, like, what's the stuff that, like, you know, was written on my DNA, then that's what it is. It's all that rock and roll stuff that, and I talked last week about kind of being more of a historian than an actual consumer, I guess you'd say, but that's, I love it, man. I love that stuff. And the old blues man, can't leave them out. You know, where was Allman Brothers getting all these Statesboro blues and all that stuff? Where were they getting it from? They're getting it from Muddy Waters and Holly, all this old stuff that he was talking about. In the middle of the Fillmore East, he's telling you where they're getting all the songs from. This is an old Willie Dixon song. This is an old old Muddy Waters song. This is an old you know, that kind of stuff. He's telling you his influences in between. So that's what I love about it.
Right.
You know, and so. So, yeah, but...
Well, I even loved... there was an Aerosmith record, Honkin' on Bobo.
Oh, yeah.
That was all 100% blues covers from that era.
Right. Like a modern interpretation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which is the same thing the Allman Brothers were doing back in the 70s, but they did it in, you know, the modern era. So, but that's where those guys are influenced, too. I mean, Steve Tyler, read his book.
Mm-hmm.
Read the stuff that he was influenced by. He said in his book he was just trying to be Janis Joplin. You know, he was just trying to be like, you know what I mean? Like, he wanted to be a singer like her, a communicator like her. You know, he wanted to move like her. He wanted to dress like her. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like, dang, you know, who would have thunk? But people love to tell you their influences if you just kinda, if you just kind of read into it a little bit. Some people won't. They kayfabe you a little bit, but I like it. I like it when people don't mind.
So, right.
Well, I guess that's about it for this week, unless you got something else.
No.
Well, cool. I hope y'all appreciate this little conversation. It's a lot easier than me trying to have a conversation by myself. So, welcome the producer here, Mr. Ian Stewart, to the podcast here.
Thank you.
He'll be jumping in and out here or there. Nothing really changing too much around here. We're just trying to take it to the next level. Still going to be a guest-driven show every single week. Maybe not on Thanksgiving and Christmas, though. So, appreciate y'all being gracious. But me and Ian will be around if ever there's need for one show. So we'll kick it up a storm. If you ever have any suggestions for the show, feel free to inbox me somewhere, whether it be on Instagram or Twitter. I don't do Facebook. I think Facebook is not a good place, so I don't go there. You guys can feel free to email your suggestions or whatever through those little inboxes, and we'll go from there. If you have ever have any topics that you want me or us to dive into, then have at it. We'll give you our best shot at it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or any artists that you would like to hear from, some young rising artists.
Yeah. Anybody you want me to try to seek out. I got a lot of people on the list, but it's, you know what I'm saying, it's ongoing. I'm always needing suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for the man, I can't believe this year's wrapping up. I've already been doing this podcast for over a year. This is like episode 60.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No.
You know, I remember just starting out wondering if I'd get, you know, 6 weeks done or something. But, you know, we've been going after this thing since last September. So,
wow.
This will be the first full straight year of it. You know, I mean, my New Year's resolution was to not miss a week doing podcasts. I didn't make it, but I got pretty close. So, 50 weeks of the year, I probably got 42 podcasts out of it. So I'll give myself an A-.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's decent, right? A-. Especially now that we're upgrading the sound. You know, for a while there, I couldn't hear my own podcast over the lawnmower. That wasn't good. You know what I mean? If you can't hear a podcast while you're mowing a yard, what good is it? You know? So, anyway, I don't know if I have any funny Uber stories right now today either. Nothing really crazy been happening lately. So, I'll keep those coming. As soon as something funny happens, I'll let you know.
All right.
Other than the lady tipped me $50 the other day. That was pretty awesome.
That's pretty solid.
Oh, that was amazing. We had a great conversation. I need to send half of it to Sadie Robertson, I guess, because they just love that me telling that story of working with them. So, Sadie, I'll send you a royalty on that, because if it wasn't for that story, it wouldn't have probably happened. So, there's something that we can shoot for. I heard rumor tell she's going to be moving into our city here at the top of the year. So maybe maybe I can use my connections and get a podcast with her. That'd be awesome.
That'd be great.
That would be great. I'd love to get that done. But they'll all be great in their own way. But I hope y'all enjoyed this week. We're going to sign off now because me and my wife are going to go to our anniversary dinner, our belated anniversary dinner, because she didn't want to go on a school night. And this is not a school night. So we're going to go to Maggiano's and eat some pasta.
That's some good food.
Yeah, made a reservation and everything. So, all right, till next week. This is Taylor Jones and brother Ian Stewart, the producer, signing off.